If I had taken much more than that, it would have been noticed. Try not to crush the loaves.
One would have thought you had done this sort of thing before, Lord Golden.
There was an edge to Laurel's tone, and just enough query on the honorific to sober us both. When neither of us came up with words, she added,
I don't think it quite fair that I share the risks of this venture, but still go blindfolded between you.
Lord Golden spoke in his best aristocratic tone.
You're right, Huntswoman, it's not fair, yet that is how it must remain for a time. For unless I am mistaken, we need to put on some speed, as our prince left this town at a gallop, so shall we.
He acted as he spoke, setting his heels to Malta, who sprang forwards joyously to challenge my black for the lead. Laurel was at his side in an instant.
Later, my brother.
I felt Nighteyes part himself from me, both mentally and physically. He knew he could not keep up with the running horses. He would follow at his own pace and on his own path. That sundering wrenched me, even as I knew it was his choice and the wisest course of action. Naked of him, stripped of his night vision, I rode on, letting my black choose her path as we cantered three abreast past the huddled houses. The village was small. We reached the outskirts swiftly. The moon's light spilled down the ribbon of road. Malta broke into a gallop, and both the other horses sprang forwards to keep up with her. We passed farmsteads and fields, both harvested and standing. I tried to keep watch for the tracks of running horses leaving the road, but saw nothing. We let the horses run until they wanted to slow down and breathe. As soon as Malta tugged at her bit, Lord Golden let her have her head, and we were off again. The two were more of one mind than I had realized. It was his complete trust that gave her such cheeky confidence. We rode through what remained of the night, and Lord Golden set our pace. As dawn greyed the skies, Laurel spoke my thoughts aloud.
At least we have a good start on those who intend to ride out at dawn to see what luck their fellows had in hunting piebalds, and clearer heads.
She left unspoken a fear I knew we all shared, that we had lost the prince's trail in our haste to follow him. As the strengthening day hid the moon from us, we rode on. Sometimes one has to trust to luck, or to believe in fate, as the fool did.
Chapter 20. Stones. There are techniques a man can use to deal with torture. One is to learn to divorce the mind from the body. Half the anguish that a skilled torturer inflicts is not the physical pain, but the victim's knowledge of the level of damage done. The torturer must walk a fine line if he wishes his victim to talk. If he takes his destruction past what the victim knows can heal, then the victim loses all incentive to talk. He but wishes to plunge more swiftly into death. But if he can hold the torment short of that line, then the torturer can make the victim an accomplice in his own torment. Suspended in pain, the anguish for the victim is wondering how long he can maintain his silence without pushing his tormentor over the line into irrevocable damage. As long as the victim refuses to talk, then the torturer proceeds, venturing closer, ever closer to damage the body cannot repair. Once a man has been broken by pain, he remains forever a victim. He cannot ever forget that place he has visited, the moment when he decided that he would surrender everything rather than endure more pain. It is a shame no man ever completely recovers from. Some try to drown it by becoming the perpetrator of similar pain, and creating a new victim to bear for them that shame. Cruelty is a skill taught not only by example, but by experience of it. From the Scroll of Versailles' Uses of Pain. As the sun rose, we rode on. Farmsteads, cultivated fields, and pastures became less common, and then vanished, to be replaced by rocky hillsides and open forest. My anxiety was divided between fear for my wolf and for my young prince. All in all, I had greater faith in my four-legged companion's ability to take care of himself than I did dutiful. With a resolution Nighteyes would have approved of, I set him out of my thoughts and concentrated on the road beside me.
The increasing heat of the day was exacerbated by the thickness of the air. I could feel a storm brewing. A heavy rainfall might take all trace of their trail from the road. Tension chewed at me. Without speaking of it, Laurel rode close to the left-hand side of the road, and I the right. We looked for any sign of horses leaving the road. Specifically, we looked for sign of at least 3 horses galloping in flight. I knew that if I were fleeing mounted pursuers, my first thought would have been to get off the road and take to the woods, where there was better chance of losing them. I assumed the prince and his companions would do the same. My fears that we had missed their trail in the dark built, but suddenly Laurel cried out that she had them. I no sooner looked at the marks than I was sure she was right. Here were a plentitude of shod hooves leaving the road, and all in haste. The wide tracks of the great warhorse were unmistakable. I was certain we had discovered where the prince had left the road with his companions, and where the mob had pursued them. As the others left the road and followed, I paused and dismounted briefly on the pretense of securing our baggage better to my black saddle. I used the opportunity to relieve myself at the side of the road, knowing Night Eyes would be seeking sign of my passage. Mounted again, I swiftly caught up with the others. A darkness gathered at the far horizon. We heard several long, rumbling threats of thunder in the distance. The trampled path of the pursuit was easy to follow, and we urged our weary beasts to canter as we followed it. Over 2 open hills of grass and scrub we followed them. As we ascended the third hill, a forest of oak and alder came down to meet us. There we caught up with the pursuers. There were 6 of them, sprawled in the tall grass in the shadows of the trees. Their ambushers had killed their mounts, and the dogs as well. It was a wise thing to do. Riderless horses returning to the village would have brought out the pursuit much sooner. Yet the act sickened me, the more so because it had been done by those of old blood. It seemed ruthless in a way that frightened me. The horses had done nothing to deserve death. What sort of folk were these that the prince rode with now? Laurel covered her mouth and nose with her hand and held it there. She did not dismount. Lord Golden looked tired and sickened, but he dismounted alongside me. Together we moved among the dead, inspecting them. They were all young men, just at the age to be caught up in such madness. Yesterday afternoon they had leapt onto their horses and ridden off to kill some piebalds. Yesterday evening they had died. Lying there, they did not look cruel or vicious or even stupid. Only dead. There were archers in those trees, I decided. And they were waiting here. I think the prince's party rode through, relying on folk that already were in position here to protect them. I had found but 1 broken arrow, cast aside. The others had been frugally and coolly recovered from the bodies. "That is not the mark of an arrow," Lord Golden pointed out a body that lay apart from the others. There were deep puncture wounds in his throat. Powerful clawed hind legs had disemboweled him. His guts buzzed, and clustering flies covered the look of horror in his eyes. "Look at the dogs. Cats attacked them as well. All the piebalds rounded and stood together here, and killed those who followed."
"And then they rode on?"
"Yes."
Had the prince's cat killed this man? Had their minds been joined as the cat killed?
"How many do you think we follow now?"
Laurel had ridden a little way ahead. I suspected she did so to be away from the bloating bodies as much as to study the trail. I didn't blame her. Now she called back in a low voice,
"I make it at least 8 that we follow now."
"And follow we must," Lord Golden said, "immediately."
Laurel nodded.
"There will be others from the village riding out by now, wondering why these men have not returned. When they find these bodies, their fury will drive them mad. The prince must be extracted before these 2 groups clash."
Her words made it sound so simple. I went back to my black, who annoyed me by sidling away 2 before I could catch her reins. She wanted schooling, but now was not the time for it. I reminded myself that blood will unnerve the calmest animal, and that patience with her now would pay great dividends later. "A different rider would give you a fist between the ears for that," I told her mildly after I was mounted.
Her shiver of apprehension surprised me. Evidently she was more aware of me than I supposed. "Don't worry. I don't do things like that," I reassured her. Horse-like, she ignored my calming remark. Thunder rolled again in the distance, and she laid her ears back flat. I think it bothered all of us to ride away and leave those bodies swelling in the heat. Realistically, it was the wise thing to do. Their fellows would find them soon enough, and to them should fall the burying. The delay it would cause them would work to our good. Wise or not, it felt wrong. The tracks we followed were now the deep cuts of hard-ridden horses. The soil under the forest roof was moister and held the trail better. At first they had ridden for distance and speed, and a child could have followed their marks. But after a time, the trail descended into a ravine and followed a twisting stream. I rode with my eyes on the trees overhead, trusting my black to follow Malta's lead as I watched for possible ambush. An unspoken concern occupied my mind. The piebalds the prince rode with seemed very organized, almost to a military level. This was the second group of men who had waited for the prince, and then ridden on with him. At least one member of the party had not hesitated to sacrifice his life for the others, nor had they scrupled at slaughtering all those who followed them. Their readiness and ruthlessness bespoke a great determination to keep the prince, and bear him on to whatever destination they had in mind. Retrieving him was very likely beyond our abilities, yet I could discover no alternative save to follow them. Sending Laurel back to Buckkeep to fetch the guard was not feasible. By the time she returned, it would be too late. We would lose not only time, but the secrecy of our mission. The ravine widened and became a narrow valley. Our quarry left the stream. Before we departed it, we paused briefly to refill water skins and share out a bit of the fool's purloined bread and some apples. I bought a bit of my black's favour with the apple core. Then we were up and off again. The long afternoon wore on. None of us had spoken much. There was little to say unless we worried out loud. Danger rode behind us as well. In either direction, we were outnumbered, and I badly missed my wolf at my side. The trail left the valley floor and wound up into the hills. The trees thinned, and the terrain became rocky. The hard earth made tracking more difficult, and we went more slowly. We passed the stony foundations of a small village, long abandoned. We rode past old hummocky formations that jutted from the boulder-strewn hillside. Lord Golden saw me looking at them, and said quietly, "Graves." "Too big," I protested. "Not for those folk. They built stone chambers to hold their dead, and often entire families were interred in them as they died." I looked curiously back at them. Tall, dead grass waved on the mounds. If there was stone beneath that sod, it was well covered. "How do you know such things?" I demanded of him. He didn't meet my eyes. "I just do, Badgerlock. Put it down to the advantages of an aristocratic education."
"I've heard tales of these sorts of places," Laurel put in, her voice hushed. "They say tall, thin ghosts rise from those mounds sometimes to capture straying children and... Oh, Ada, save us. Look, the standing stone from the same tales."
I lifted my eyes to follow her pointing finger. A shiver walked up my back. Black and gleaming, the stone stood twice as tall as a man did. Silver veined it. No moss clung to it. The inland breezes had been kinder to it than the salt, heavy storm winds that had weathered the witness stones near Buckkeep. At this distance, I could not see what signs were carved into its sides, but I knew they would be there. This stone pillar was kin to the witness stone, and to the black pillar that had once transported me to the Elderling City. I stared at it, and knew it had been cut from the same quarry that had birthed Verity's dragon. Had magic, or muscle, borne it so far from that place to this? "Do the graves go with the stone?" I asked Lord Golden.
"Things that are next to each other are not always related to one another," he observed smoothly,
and I knew he evaded my question. I turned slightly in the saddle to ask Laurel, "What does the legend say about the stone?" She shrugged one shoulder and smiled, but I think the intensity of my question made her uneasy.
"There are Lots of tales, but most have the same spine.
She drew a breath.
A straying child, or an idle shepherd, or lovers who have run away from forbidding parents, come to the mounds. In most tales they sit down beside them to rest, or to find a bit of shade on a hot day. Then the ghosts rise from the mounds and lead them to the standing stone, and they follow the ghost inside to a different world. Some say they never come back. Some say they come back aged and old after being gone but a night. But others say the opposite, that 100 years later, the lovers came back, hand in hand, as young as ever, to find their quarrelling parents long dead, and that they are free to wed.
I had my own opinion of such tales, but did not voice them. Once I had stepped through such a pillar, to find myself in a distant dead city. Once the black stone walls of that long dead city had spoken to me, and the city had sprung to life around me. Monoliths and cities of black stone were the work of the elderlings, long perished from the world. I had believed the elderlings had been denizens of a far realm, deep in the mountains behind Katrikken's mountain kingdom. Twice now I had seen evidence that they had walked these 6 duchies' hills as well. But how many summers ago? I tried to catch Lord Golden's eye, but he stared straight ahead, and it seemed to me that he hastened his horse on. I knew by the set of his mouth that any question I asked him would be answered with another question, or with an evasion. I focused my efforts on Laurel. "It seems odd that you would hear tales of this place in Farrow." She gave that small shrug again.
"The tales I heard were of a similar place in Farrow. And I told you my mother's family came from a place not far from the Brisinga Holdings. We often visited, when she was still alive. But I'd wager that the folk around here tell the same sort of tales about those mounds and that pillar, if any folk do live around here."
That seemed unlikely as the day wore on. The further we rode on, the wilder the country became. The horizon darkened, and the storm muttered threats, but came no nearer. If these valleys had ever known the plough, or these hills ever nurtured pasturing kine, they had forgotten it these many years. The earth was dry, stones thrusting out amongst the clots of dried-up grasses and scrubby brush. Chirring insects and bird calls were the only signs of animal life. The trail became more difficult to follow, and perforce we went more slowly. Often I glanced back behind us. Our tracks, on top of the tracks we followed, would make it easier for our pursuers to catch up with us. But I could think of no alternative. The constant hum of the insects suddenly hushed off to our left. I turned towards it, my heart in my mouth. But an instant later I felt my brother's presence. 2 breaths, and I could see him. As always, I marvelled at how well the wolf could hide himself, even in the scantiest of cover. As he drew closer, my gladness at seeing him turned to dismay. He trotted determinedly, head down, and his tongue hung nearly to his knees. Without a word to the others, I pulled up my black and dismounted, taking down my water-skin. He came to me to drink water from my cupped hands. "How did you catch up so swiftly?"
"You follow tracks going slowly to find your way. I followed my heart. Where your path has wound through these hills, mine brought me straight to you, over a terrain a horse would not relish."
"Oh, my brother."
"No time to pity me. I came to bring you warning. You are followed. I passed those who come behind you. They stopped at the bodies. They were enraged, shouting to the skies. Their anger will delay them for a time, but when they come on, they will ride fast and furious."
"Can you keep up?"
"I can hide far more easily than you can. Instead of thinking of what I will do, you should think of what you should do."
There was little enough we could do. I remounted, kicked my black, and caught up with the others. We should try for more speed. Laurel gave me a look, but said nothing. Only a shift in Lord Golden's posture betrayed he had heard me. But in answer, Malta sprang forwards. My black suddenly decided she would not be outdone. She leapt forwards, and in 4 strides, we led the way. I kept my eyes on the ground as we hurried along. It looked as if the prince and his fellows had made for the shelter of some trees. I applauded their decision. I looked forward to gaining the cover. I urged a bit more speed from my black, and led us all directly into the ambush. A mental shout from Night Eyes prompted me to rein to one side. Laurel took the arrow, dropping to the earth with a cry. The shot had been intended for me. Fury and horror blazed up in me, and I rode my black straight at the stand of trees. My luck was that there was only one archer, and he had not had time to knock another arrow.
As we passed under the down-sweeping branches, I stood up in my stirrups, miraculously caught a firm hold, and pulled myself up on the branch. The archer was trying to swing his arm to bring the arrow to bear on me, but the intervening small branches were hampering him. There was no time to think about consequences. I launched myself at him, springing like a wolf. We fell in a tangle of two men and the bow. A projecting branch nearly broke my shoulder without breaking our fall. It turned us in the air. We landed with the young archer on top of me. The impact slammed the air out of me. I could think but not act. Nighteyes saved me the need. He dashed in, a rush of claws and teeth that swept the youth off my body. I felt our attacker's surprised attempt at a rappel against Nighteyes. I think he was too shocked to put much strength into it. I lay on the earth as they fought beside me, trying frantically to pull air into my lungs. He swung a fist, but Nighteyes dodged and seized his passing wrist. The archer shrieked and launched a wild kick at the wolf. I felt its stunning impact. Nighteyes kept his hold, but lost the strength in it. As the man wrenched his torn wrist from the wolf's jaws, I found enough breath to act. From where I lay, I kicked the archer in the head. I flung myself on top of the man. My hands found his throat as Nighteyes seized his right calf in his jaws and hung on. The man flopped wildly between us, but could not escape. Nighteyes worried his leg. I squeezed his throat and held on until I felt his struggles cease. Even then, I kept a grip on his throat with one hand, as my other found my belt knife. The entire world had shrunk to a reddened circle that was my vision of his face.
"Don't kill him! Don't kill him! Don't kill him!"
Lord Golden's shouts penetrated my mind finally as I held the knife to our attacker's throat. I had never been less inclined to listen. Yet as the red haze of battle faded from my vision, I found myself looking down at a boy, little older than Hap. His blue eyes stood out in their sockets, both in horror of death and for lack of air. Something in our fall had scraped the side of his face, and blood stood out in fine rows on his cheek. But I loosened my grip, and Nighteyes dropped his leg. But still I straddled his chest and held my knife to his throat. I was not at all sentimental as to the innocence of young boys. We'd already seen this one's bow work. He would as soon kill me as not. I kept my gaze on him as I asked the fool, "Is Laurel dead?"
"Scarcely."
The incensed voice was female. Laurel staggered over to us. A glance showed me her hand clamped tight to the point of her shoulder. Blood was leaking through her fingers. She had already pulled the arrow out. "Did you get the head out?" I asked quickly.
"I would not have pulled it out if I had not been sure I could get the whole thing,"
she replied waspishly. Pain did not improve her temperament. She was pale, but two bright spots of colour stood on her cheeks. She looked down at the boy I straddled, and her eyes went very wide. I heard her take a ragged breath. Nighteyes stood beside me, panting heavily.
"We should get out of here." The thought was sluggish with pain. "Others may come, those who follow or those who went ahead."
I saw the boy's brow furrow. I glanced at Laurel. "Can you ride as you are? Because we must leave here. We need to question him, but this isn't the time. We don't want to be caught by those who follow, or by his friends coming back for him." I could tell by her eyes that she didn't know the answer to my question, but she lied bravely.
"I can ride. Let's go. I, too, have questions I'd like to ask this one."
The archer stared at her, horror-stricken at the venom in her voice. He suddenly bucked under me, trying to escape. I backhanded him with my free hand. "Don't try that again. It's much easier for me to kill you than drag you along." He knew I spoke the truth. His eyes went to Lord Golden, and then to Laurel, before his gaze came back to me. He peered up at me, blood leaking from his nose, and I recognized his shocked look. This was a young man who had killed, but never before been in imminent danger of being killed. I felt oddly qualified to introduce him to the sensation. No doubt I had once worn that same expression. "On your feet." 15 years ago, I would have backed up the command by hauling him upright. Now, I kept a grip on his shirt front, but let him stand up himself. I was short of breath after our tussle and not inclined to spend my reserves on a show of strength. Night Eyes lay down on the moss beneath the tree, unabashedly panting.
"Disappear," I suggested to him.
"In a moment."
The archer stared from me to my wolf and back again, confusion growing in his eyes. I refused to meet his gaze. Instead, I cut the leather thong that fastened the collar of his shirt. He flinched as my knife blade tugged through it. I jerked the leather loose and roughly turned him. "Your hands," I demanded, and without quibbling, he put them behind him. The fight seemed to have gone out of him. The teeth marks in his arm were still bleeding. I tied his wrists tightly together. I completed my task and glanced up to find Laurel glowering at my prisoner. Obviously, she was taking the attack personally. Perhaps no one had ever tried to kill her before. The first time is always a memorable experience. Lord Golden assisted Laurel into the saddle. I knew she wanted to refuse his help, but didn't dare. Missing her mount would be more humiliating than accepting his support. That left my black to carry my captive and me. Neither my horse nor I were happy with it. I picked up the archer's bow, and after a moment's hesitation, flung it up into the tree where it snagged and hung. With luck, no one passing here would happen to glance up and see it. From the way he stared after it, I knew it had been precious to him. I took up my black's reins. "I'm going to mount," I told my captive. "Then I'm going to reach down and pull you up behind me. If you don't cooperate, I'm going to knock you cold and leave you for those others. You know the ones I mean. The ones you thought we were, the killers from the village." He moistened his lips. The whole side of his face had started to puff and darken. For the first time, he spoke.
"You aren't with them?"
I stared at him coldly. "Did you even wonder about that before you shot at me?" I demanded. I mounted my horse.
"You were following our trail?"
he pointed out. He looked over at the woman he had shot, and his expression was almost stricken.
"I thought you were villagers coming to kill us, truly."
I rode my black over to him and reached down. After an instant's hesitation, he hitched his shoulder up towards me. I got a firm grip on his upper arm. My black snorted and turned in a circle. But after two hops, he managed to get a leg over her. I gave him a moment to settle behind me, and then told him, "Sit tight. She's a tall horse. Throw yourself off her, you'll likely break her shoulder." I glanced back the way we had come. There was still no sign of pursuit, but I had a sense of our luck running out. I looked around. The trail of the Witted led uphill, but I didn't want to follow them further until I had wrung from this boy whatever he knew. My eyes plotted out a possible ruse. We could go downhill to where a stream probably flowed in winter. The moister soil at the bottom of the hill would take our tracks well. We could follow the old steam bed for a time, then leave it. Then, up the opposite side and across a rocky hillside and back into cover. It might work. Our tracks would be fresher, but they might just assume they were catching up. We might draw the pursuers off the prince. "This way," I announced, and put my plan into action. My horse was not pleased with her double burden. She stepped out awkwardly as if determined to show me this was a bad idea.
"But the trail,"
Laurel protested as we abandoned the faint tracks we had followed all day. "We don't need their tracks. We've got him. He'll know where they're headed." I felt him draw breath. Then he said, through gritted teeth,
"They won't tell?"
"Of course you will," I assured him.
I kicked my black at the same time that I asserted to her that she would obey me. Startled, she stepped out, and despite the added weight, she bore us both well. She was a strong and swift horse, but one accustomed to using those traits only as she pleased. We would have to come to terms about that. I made her move fast down the hill, and then pushed her along the stream until we came to a dry watercourse that met it. It was stony, and that pleased me. We diverged there, and when I came to a rock-scrabble slope, we went up it. Behind me, the archer hung on with his knees. My black seemed to handle the challenge without too much effort. I hoped I was not setting too difficult a pace and course for Laurel. I urged my black up the gravelly hill at a steep angle. If I had lured the village mob into following us, I hoped this would present them with some nasty tracking. At the top of the hill, I paused for the others to catch up. Night Eyes had vanished. I knew he rested now, gathering his strength to come after us. I wanted my wolf at my side.
yet I knew he was in less danger by himself than in my company. I scanned the surrounding terrain. Night would be coming on soon, and I wanted us out of sight and in a defensible location, one that overlooked other approaches. Up, I decided. The hill we were on was part of a ridgeline hummocking through the land. Its sister was both higher and steeper, the rocks of her bones showing more clearly. This way, I told the others, as if I knew what I was doing, and led them on. We descended briefly into a scantily wooded draw, and then I led them up again, following a dry stream bed. Chance and good fortune blessed us. On the next hillside I encountered a narrow game trail, obviously made by something smaller and more agile than horses. We followed it. For a large horse, my black managed well, but I heard my captive catch his breath several times as the trail edged across the hill's steep face. I knew Malta would make nothing of this. I dared not look back to see how Laurel was faring. I had to trust Whitecap to bear his mistress along. My captive dared to speak to me.
"I am Old Blood,"
he whispered it insistently, as if it should mean something to me.
"Are you?"
I replied in sarcastic surprise.
"But you are..."
"Shut up," I cut his words off fiercely. "Your magic matters nothing to me. You're a traitor. Speak again and I'll throw you off the horse right now." He resumed a stunned silence. As the path led up and up, I wondered if I had chosen well. The few trees we passed were twisted and gaunt, the leaves hanging limp in the hovering storm's aura. The flesh of the earth gave way to bony stones. I knew my refuge when I saw it. It was not a true cave, but was more a deep undercut in a cliff. We had to dismount to coax our horses the rest of the way up to it. I led my black in. It was cooler beneath the undercut, and water oozed from the rock face at the back. Perhaps at some time of the year it had been responsible for carving the undercut, but now it did little more than leave a damp, green streak on the cave floor before it dribbled away down the hillside. There was no feed for the horses. It could not be helped. It offered us the best shelter, and it looked defensible. "We'll spend the night here," I announced quietly. I wiped sweat from my brow and neck. The storm was lowering and the air thick with the threat of rain. I pointed to a spot near the back of the cavern. "Get down and sit there," I told my prisoner. He spoke not a word, but sat, staring down at me. I gave him no second chance. I reached up, seized the front of his shirt, and jerked him off the horse. Anger has always multiplied my strength. I let him almost stand, then flung him hard from me so that he hit the back wall of the cave and then slid down it to sit flat on the floor, half stunned. "There's worse to come," I promised him, harshly. Laurel stared, white-faced and wide-eyed, probably shocked at my taking command. I took her horse from her, and Lord Golden helped her ease herself down. My captive showed no inclination to try to flee, and so I ignored him as I unsaddled the horses and set up our makeshift camp. My black lipped and then sucked at the traces of water. I scraped away sand to deepen the depression at the bottom of the wall, and gratifyingly water began to pool there. Lord Golden was seeing to Laurel's shoulder. Deft as the fool had always been, he had cut and peeled the clothing back from the injury. Now he held a dampened cloth to it. The blood on the cloth looked dark rather than bright. Their heads were bowed together over it in quiet talk. I drew closer. "How bad is it?" I asked quietly.
"Bad enough," Lord Golden replied succinctly. But it was Laurel's glance that shocked me. She stared at me as if I were a rabid beast. It was far more than the affront she might take at one who had rudely interrupted a private conversation. I withdrew, wondering if the bearing of her shoulder before me was what bothered her. Yet she seemed to have no qualms about Lord Golden touching her. Well, I had other things to tend, and would intrude no further. I considered the small supply of food that remained to us. Bread and apples made up most of it. There was little enough for three, and not enough for four. I coldly decided our prisoner could do without. Like as not, he'd had his own provisions, and had probably eaten better today than we had. Thinking of him made me decide to check on him. He was sitting awkwardly, his hands still bound behind him, considering his lacerated ankle. I glanced at it, but offered no sympathy. I stood silently over him until he spoke.
"Can I have some water?"
"Turn around," I ordered him,
and was impassive as he struggled to obey. I untied his wrists. He made a small sound as I jerked the leather thong free of the clotted blood there. Slowly he moved his hands around in front of him. "You can get water over there, when the horses are satisfied." He nodded, slowly. I knew well how badly his shoulders ached by now. My own was still throbbing from striking the tree branch. His scraped face had darkened and scabbed from the damage taken in our fall. One blue eye was shot with blood. Somehow his injuries made him look even younger. He studied the forearm the wolf had mangled. By the set of his jaw, I knew he was afraid even to touch his injury. Slowly, he lifted his eyes to me, and then looked past me.
"Where is your wolf?"
he asked me. I nearly backhanded him. He flinched at my aborted gesture. "You don't ask questions," I told him coldly. "You answer them. Where are they taking the prince?" He looked at me blankly, and I cursed my own clumsiness. Perhaps he had not known the prince's identity. Well, too late to call the words back. I'd probably have to kill him anyway. I recognized that thought as Chade's, and set it aside. "The boy who rides with the cat," I clarified. "Where are they taking him?" He swallowed dryly.
"I don't know,"
he lied sullenly. I wanted to throttle the truth out of him. He threatened me in too many ways. I stood up abruptly before I could give in to my temper. "Yes, you do. I'll give you some time to think about all the ways that I could make you tell me. Then I'll be back." I walked a few steps away from him before I forced a grin onto my face and turned. "Oh, and if you think this is a good time to make a run for it, well, two or three steps outside and you'd no longer be wondering where my wolf is." A white blast of light suddenly flared into our shelter. The horses screamed, and two heartbeats later, thunder shook the earth. I blinked, momentarily blinded, and then, outside the mouth of the cave, the rain came down as if someone had overturned a bucket. Abruptly, it was dark outside. A puff of wind carried rain into our cave mouth, then shifted away. The warmth of the day departed. I took food over to Lord Golden and Laurel. She looked a bit dazed. He had dragged one of the saddles and a blanket over to make a backrest for her. She pushed her straggling hair back from her face with her left hand. Her right lay in her lap. She had bled more than I thought, for blood had trickled down to clot between her fingers and outline her nails. Lord Golden accepted the bread and apples for both of them. I glanced at the downpour outside the cave's mouth and shook my head. "This storm will wash every bit of trail away. The good of that is that perhaps the villagers will just take their dead and go home. The bad is that we lose the prince's trail, too. Making our ambush a talk is our only hope of finding the prince now. I'll tend to that when I get back." I unbuckled my sword belt and held it out. When neither reached for it, I drew the blade and set it on the ground beside them. I lowered my voice. "You might have to use it. If you do, don't hesitate. Kill him. If he gets away and manages to warn his friends, we'll have no chance of recovering the prince. I'm letting him think for a bit, then I'll get the truth out of him. Meanwhile, I'm going out to get a bit of firewood while there's any still dry, and I'll check to see if anyone is following our trail." Laurel lifted her good hand to cover her mouth. She suddenly looked sick. Lord Golden's glance went to the prisoner and then met mine. His eyes were troubled, but surely he knew I had to look for Night Eyes.
"Take my cloak,"
he suggested. "It would only get as wet as the rest of me. I'll change into dry things when I come back." He didn't tell me to be careful, but it was in his look. I nodded to it, steeled myself, and walked out into the pouring rain. It was every bit as cold and unpleasant as I expected it to be. I stood, eyes squinted and shoulders hunched to it, peering out through the grey downpour. Then I took a breath and resolutely changed my expectations. As Black Rolf had once shown me, much discomfort was based on human expectations. As a man, I expected to be warm and dry when I chose to be. Animals did not harbour any such beliefs. So it was raining. That part of me that was wolf could accept that. Rain meant being cold and wet. Once I acknowledged that and stopped comparing it to what I wished it would be, the conditions were far more tolerable. I set out.
The rain had turned the pathway up to the cave into a milky stream. The footing was treacherous as I went down it. Even knowing that our tracks were there, I had a hard time seeing them. I allowed myself to hope that rain, dark, and the lack of a trail to follow would send our pursuers back to town. Some would have undoubtedly turned back to the village to bear the tidings of the deaths. Did I dare to hope they all had, bearing the bodies with them? At the foot of the hill I paused. Cautiously I quested out. "Where are you?" There was no answer. Lightning cracked in the distance, and thunder rumbled a few moments later. The fury of the rain renewed itself in a roar. I thought of my wolf as I had last seen him, battered and tired and old. I threw aside all caution and howled my fear to the sky. "Night Eyes!"
"Be quiet. I'm coming."
He was as disgusted with me as if I were a yelping cub. I closed down my wit, but still sighed in deep relief. If he could be that irritated with me, then he was not in as bad a way as I had feared. I watched for wood, and found some that was almost dry in the shelter of a long fallen tree. I took handfuls of the pithy wood from the rotting trunk and broke dead branches into manageable lengths. I pulled off my shirt and bundled my tinder and fuel into it in the hopes of keeping it marginally drier. As I toiled back up the hill to the cavern, the rain ceased as abruptly as it had begun. The pattering of second-hand drops from the tree branches and the trickling sounds of water seeking to soak into the earth filled the evening. Somewhere in the near distance, a night bird sang a cautious two notes. "It's me," I said quietly, as I approached the overhang of stone. My black snorted a soft reply. I could barely see the others within, but after a few moments my eyes adjusted. Lord Golden had set out my flint box for me. Luck was with me, and in a few moments I had a tiny fire kindled in the back of the cave. The smoke crawled along the stony roof until it found its way out. I stepped outside to check that it was not too visible from the hillside below. Satisfied, I returned to build the fire to a respectable size. Laurel sat up and then scooted closer to the friendly light. She looked a bit better, but her pain was still evident on her face. I watched her steal a sidelong glance at the archer. There was accusation in her eyes, but also misplaced pity. I hoped she wouldn't try to interfere in what I had to do. Lord Golden was already muttering through his pack. A moment later, he pulled out one of my blue servant shirts and offered it to me. "Thanks," I muttered. At the edge of the firelight, my prisoner sat with his shoulders hunched. I noticed the neat bandaging on his ankle and wrist and recognized the fool's knots. Well, I had not told him to leave the man alone. I should have known he would tend to him. I dropped my sodden shirt on the cave floor. As I shook out the dry shirt, Laurel spoke softly from the shadows.
"That's quite a scar."
"Which one?" I asked without thinking.
"Center of your back,"
she replied as quietly. "Oh, that one." I tried to keep my voice light. "That was an arrow whose head didn't come out with the shaft."
"So that was your concern earlier. Thank you."
She smiled at me. It was almost an apology. I could think of no reply. Her words and gentle smile had made me self-conscious. Then I became aware of Jinnah's charm exposed at my throat. "Ah." I finished putting on the dry shirt, then I took the leggings that Lord Golden handed me and stepped into the shadows behind the horses to change. The dribble of water down the inside wall had swelled to a steady trickle, and a tiny stream was now venturing past the horses and out the mouth of the cave. Well, at least they would have water tonight, if not grass. I tasted a scooped handful. It was earthy, but not foul. Back by the fire, Lord Golden solemnly offered me a hunk of bread and apple. I had not realized how hungry I was until I took the first bite. All of it would not have filled me, but I ate only the apple and half the bread. Unfortunately, by the last bite, I still felt just as hungry. I ignored that as I had the rain earlier. It was another human-based assumption, that one had the right to a full belly at regular intervals. It was a comforting idea, but not truly necessary to survival. I repeated that several times to myself. I looked up from the flames to find Lord Golden eyeing me. Laurel had tugged a blanket over herself and dozed off. I spoke quietly. "Did he say anything while you were bandaging him?" Lord Golden considered. Then a smile broke through the facade. "Ouch," the fool offered. I grinned back. then forced myself to face the eventuality. Despite Laurel's shut eyes, I lowered my voice, pitching it only for the fool's ears. I have to know everything he knows about their plans. They're organized, and they're ruthless. There's more to this than witted folk helping a runaway boy. I have to make him tell us where they've taken the prince. The smile faded from the fool's face, but Lord Golden's hauteur did not replace it.
How?
He asked in dread. However I must, I replied coldly. I felt a sick anger that he would make this harder for me. The prince and his well-being were what mattered, not his squeamishness, nor the life of the old blood boy who sat by the cavern wall. Not even my own feelings mattered in this. I was doing this for Chade, for my queen, for the Farseer line, for the prince himself. This dirty little task was what I had been schooled to do. It was all part of the quiet work of an assassin's training. My guts clenched inside me. I pulled my eyes away from the fool's anxious gaze and stood up. Get it over with. Make him talk. Then kill him. I dared not let him go, and we certainly couldn't be hindered by taking him with us. It wouldn't be the first time I'd killed for the Farseers. I'd never had to beat information out of my victim first, but I knew how to do that too. I'd learned those lessons firsthand in Regal's dungeon. I only wished the circumstances had left me another choice. I turned away from the light and walked into the darkness, where the young man waited. He was sitting on the ground, his back to the cavern wall. For a time, I just stood over him, looking down on him. I hoped his dread of this encounter was as great as mine. When he finally gave in and looked up at me, I growled, "Where are they taking him?"
"I don't know,"
he said, but the words had no strength in them. I kicked him hard, the toe of my boot catching him under his ribs. I'd gauged it to drive the air from his lungs without doing permanent damage. It wasn't time for that yet. He yelped and curled over his injury. Before he could recover at all, I reached down, grabbed him by the shirt front and jerked him to his feet. I had the advantage of height, so I gritted my teeth and held him on his toes. His hands caught at my wrists and tugged feebly. He was still gasping for air. "Where?" I demanded flatly. Outside, the rain resumed in a sudden hissing roar.
"They didn't say,"
he wheezed. And all Ida's mercy made me long to believe him. I dared not. I slammed him hard against the cavern wall so that the back of his head bounced off it. The impact made my bruised shoulder shout at me. I saw him bite his lip against his own pain. Behind me, I heard a muffled sound from Laurel, but didn't turn to it. "You can tell me now, or you can tell me later," I warned him as I held him hard against the wall. I hated what I was doing, yet somehow his stupid resistance was fueling my anger towards him. I drew on it, trying to build the will I needed to continue. Quickest was kindest. Harshest was actually most merciful. The sooner he talked, the sooner it would be over. He had chosen the path that led him to this. He was a traitor in league with those who had lured Cotricon's son from her side. The heir to the Six Duchies' throne might even now be in mortal danger, and what this man knew could let me rescue him. Whatever I did to him now, he had brought upon himself. Something like a boy's sob shook him. He caught a breath.
"Please,"
he said quietly. I hardened my heart and drew back my fist.
"But you promised never again, no more of the killing that brings no meat and forges the heart."
Night Eyes was aghast. "Stay out of this, my brother. I have to do this."
"No, you don't. I come. I come as swift as I can. Wait for me, my brother, please. Wait."
I broke free of the wolf's thoughts. Time to end this, break him. But the stubborn traitor looked very much like a boy fighting desperately to keep his secret. Tears cut clean streaks down his cheeks. The wolf's thoughts had stolen my determination. I found I had set him back on his feet. I had never had any passion for this sort of thing. Some men, I knew well, took pleasure in breaking another man's spirit. But the torture I had endured in Regal's dungeon had locked me forever into the role of victim. Whatever I did to this young man, I would feel. Worse, I would see myself through his eyes, as I became to him what Bolt had been to me. I looked aside before he could see the weakness in my eyes, but it did me no good. For the fool stood, but an arm's length away, and all the horror I tried to suppress was in his gaze. The pity mixed with his horror stung me. He saw. He saw, despite all the years, the beaten boy that still huddled within me, and always would. Somewhere, I forever cowered. Somewhere, I was endlessly unmanned by what had been done to me. It was intolerable that anyone should know that, even my fool, perhaps especially him. "Don't interfere," I told him harshly, in a voice I had not known I owned. "Go tend to the huntswoman." It was as if I had struck him. His mouth opened, but no sound came out. I set my own jaw. I made myself cold. I tightened my grip slowly on my captive's collar. He struggled to swallow, and then his breath wheezed in his throat. His blue eyes flickered over my scar and broken nose. It was not the face of a merciful, civilized man. "Traitor," I reminded myself as I gazed at him. "You betray your prince just as Regal betrayed Verity." How often had I fantasized about what I would have done to Regal, had I ever been given a chance for vengeance? This boy deserved it just as richly. He would bring the Farseer line to an end if I let him keep his secret. I breathed slowly, staring at him, letting those thoughts come to the front of my mind. I felt them change the set of my mouth and my eyes. My resolve firmed. Time to end this one way or another. "Last chance," I warned harshly as I took out my knife. I watched my hands as if they belonged to someone else. I put the tip of the bared blade just below his left eye. I let it dig into the skin there. He clenched the eye shut, but we both knew that would not protect it. "Where?"
"Stop him," Laurel pleaded in a shaking voice. "Please, Lord Colden, make him stop."
At her words, I felt the man in my grip start to tremble. How frightening for him that even my companions dreaded what I would do to him. A smile took over my face and froze it in rictus.
"Tom Badgerlock!"
Lord Golden addressed me imperiously. I didn't even turn to his words. He had dragged me into this just as much as Chade and Catrican had. It was all inevitable now. Let him watch and see where the road led. If he didn't like it, he could avert his eyes. I couldn't. I'd have to live it.
"No, you don't. And I refuse to. I won't be bonded to that. I won't allow it."
I felt him before I saw him. A moment later, the faint reach of the firelight picked out his silhouette, and then my wolf tottered in. Water dripped from him. The guard hairs of his coat had gone to downward points. He came a few steps further into the cave, and then paused to shake himself. The touch of his mind on mine was like a firm hand on my shoulder. He turned my thoughts to him, and to us, pushing aside all other concerns.
"My brother, Changer, I am so weary. I am cold and wet, please. I need your help."
He ventured closer still, and then he leaned against my leg, asking quietly,
"Food?"
With the physical touch, he pushed aside a darkness that I had not known lived within me, to fill me with his wolfness and the now. I let go of my prisoner, and he sagged away from me. He tried to stand, but his knees gave out, and he sat down heavily on the floor. His head fell forwards, and I thought I heard a muffled sob. He didn't matter right now. I pushed that Fitzchivalry Farseer away to become the wolf's partner. I took a breath. I felt weak with relief at seeing Night Eyes. I clutched at his presence and felt it sustain me. "I saved you some bread."
"Better than nothing."
He pressed his shaking body against my leg as he led me back to the fire and its welcome warmth. He waited patiently while I found the chunk of bread for him. I sat down close beside him, heedless of his wet fur, and handed him the bread, a bit at a time. When he had finished eating, I smoothed my hand along his back. My touch slicked away rain. The wet had not penetrated his coat, but I could sense his pain and his weariness. Yet his vast love for me was what wrapped me and made me myself again. I found a thought worth sharing. "How are those scratches healing?"
slowly. I slipped my hand down to the flesh of his belly. Mud had spattered on his belly and contaminated the wounds. He was cold, but the swollen scratches were hot. They were festering. Lord Golden's pot of unguent was still in my saddlepack. I fetched it, and amazingly, Night Eyes let me apply it to the long, raised welts. Honey, I knew, was a drawing thing. It might suck the heat from his wounds. I glanced up, suddenly aware of the fool beside us. He knelt down and put both his hands on the wolf's head like a benediction. He looked deep into Night Eye's eyes as he said,
"I am so relieved to see you, old friend."
I heard the edge of tears in his voice. Wariness haunted his voice as he cautiously asked me,
"When you are finished with the ointment, might I have some for Laurel's shoulder?"
"Of course," I said quietly. I dabbed a last bit onto Night Eye's, then gave the pot to the fool. As he leaned closer to take it, he whispered softly,
"I have never been so frightened in my life, and there was nothing I could do. I think only he could have called you back."
As he stood, the back of his hand brushed my cheek. I didn't know if he sought to reassure himself or me. I felt an instant of misery for both of us. It was not ended, only put off. With a sigh, Night Eyes suddenly stretched out beside me. He rested his head on my leg. He stared out towards the mouth of the cave.
"No, it is ended. I forbid it, Changer."
"I have to find the prince. He knows where he is. I have no choice."
"I am your choice. Believe in me. I'll track the prince for you."
"I doubt this storm has left any trail to follow."
"Trust me. I'll find him for you, I promise. Only do not do this thing."
"Night Eyes, I can't let him live. He knows too much."
He ignored that thought, or seemed to. Instead, he bade me,
"Before you kill him, think of what you take from him. Remember what it is to be alive."
Before I could reply, he trapped me in his senses and swept me into his wolf's now. Fitz Chivalry Farseer and all his concerns were banished. We stared out into the black night outside the cave mouth. The falling rain had wakened all the sense of the hills, and he read them for me. The rain was a steady hiss against the ground, masking all other sounds. Beside us, the fire was subsiding. I was peripherally aware of the fool tending it, feeding it bits of firewood to keep it alive, but hoarding our supply against the long night to come. I smelled the smoke, the horses, the other humans. His intent was to take me away from being a man with a man's cares and back to being a wolf. In that, he succeeded better than he planned. Perhaps Night Eyes was wearier than he knew, or perhaps the hissing rain lulled us both into the closeness of puppies that set no boundaries. I drifted into him, into his mind and spirit, and then into his body. Slowly I came to awareness of the flesh that enclosed him. He had no reserves left. The weariness that filled him pushed out all else. He was dwindling, like the fire, taking in sustenance but nonetheless growing ever smaller. Life is a balance. We tend to forget that as we go blithely from day to day. We eat and drink and sleep and assume that we will always rise up the next day, that meals and rest will always replenish us. Injuries we expect to heal, and pain to lessen as times go by, even when we are faced with wounds that heal more slowly, with pain that lessens by day, only to return in full force at nightfall. Even when sleep does not leave us rested, we still expect that somehow tomorrow all will come back into balance, and that we will go on. At some point, the exquisite balance has tipped, and despite all our flailing efforts, we begin the slow fall from the body that maintains itself to the body that struggles, nails clawing, to cling to what it used to be. I stared at the darkness before us. It suddenly seemed that each of the wolf's exhalations was longer than the breaths he drew in. Like a foundering ship, he sank each day deeper into an acceptance of routine pain and decreased vitality. He slept heavily now, all weariness forgotten, his broad skulled head on my lap. I drew a stealthy breath, and then gently set my hand to his brow. As a lad, I had been a source of strength for Verity.
He had set his hand to my shoulder, and by his skill drawn off the strength he desperately needed to fight the